Hello and welcome to Boxing Life Stories with me, Tristix.
What happened in the ring after Tyson Oliver was child's play compared to that one?
Still get goosebumps to this day.
you couldn't take the tears from his eyes or the smile off his face, could you?
I know.
He's bitten me. He said, well, let's pull him back.
And the paper, they made me look like Al Capone.
This is going to be your night.
There's winning and there's nothing else.
Hello, and we're nearly here at season 4 of Boxing Life Stories. I've been getting episodes in the bank, and here are a few highlights of what you can expect in the coming weeks. But before I leave you to the likes of Roy Jones and Peter Buckley, I just want to say thank you to our sponsors, Hansenly Resourcing and Delco Safety Compliance, who are behind us going into season 4. Hansenly Resourcing are proud sponsors of Boxing Life Stories. They're a multi-award winning provider of technology and business change professionals across the UK, Europe, US and Asia Pacific regions. Not only do they find you the best people, they'll help you retain them, and you can find out more at hansenly.com. We're also brought to you by Delco Safety Compliance, who are a leading provider of professional fire risk assessments and safety services to businesses and property owners nationwide. They provide expert impartial advice on all aspects of fire, health and safety compliance, and you can find out more at www.delcosafety.co.uk. There's a short interview with Roy Jones coming your way that I really hope to finish up, because we had started to touch on some very interesting areas before we were actually kicked out of the hotel where we were doing the interview. But here's a taste of what you can expect from Roy Jones. Going back to when you were 10, when you first went to the gym, what made you go to the start? Did you look up to those other guys like your Ray Leonard's and
yeah, I did look up to those guys. But what happened was, I had a long journey to get me to the gym. My father boxed and I didn't know it. So my father had gloves around the house all the time. I didn't know he was really boxing. He used to beat the heavy bag, but I didn't know he was boxing for real. So often at night time, from when I was about 6 years old on to about 9, he would get on his knees and box with me. And I never could win because I was just a 6-year-old kid, you know. So he would maul me, mess with me, make me think I had a chance. Then he would push me down and make me cry. And every night I go to bed crying. But the next day, I put a glove back out to fight again. Every day, all day at school, I was figuring out how I was going to win that night. It got so bad that my mom would beg me, please don't fight tonight. And I'll say, okay. And right before time for me to go to bed, that it just kept calling me. And I know I'm going to lose, but I had to go. I couldn't help it. You understand me? So after years and years of that, and then actually, and when I was 5, I think in 74, my father was watching Al Lee versus Joe Frazier. And I realized that Al Lee was beating Joe Frazier with his mind more so than with his hands. So I was like, wow, I can do that if somebody teaches me how to use my hands. So from that point, I felt like I could box if somebody ever taught me how to use my hands. So I got it in my system at 5. But I didn't really start doing it until I got about 6 or 7. And I ain't going to the gym until I was 10.
And when you went to the gym, your dad pitched you in tough, didn't he? With bigger kids, older kids.
Once he taught me how to box a little bit, yes. I was the youngest one in the gym. So anything we did for a sparring, the person was going to be bigger and older than me because I was the youngest one there.
So you learned the hard way?
Yeah, I had to.
Sink or swim?
That's what it is.
Did you enjoy that period?
Did you enjoy
that you were getting proven and all that?
Well, I enjoyed it. Some days were more hectic than others because I was the smallest and youngest one there. But if you survived it, you knew you had to be destined for greatness. And I survived it.
So. Did you ever get things back on track with your dad?
No.
And conversations with the likes of 300-fight veteran Peter Buckley. Have you ever felt it hard to deal with the negative comments about being a journeyman? Or is it water off a duck's back?
It can be water off a duck's back, but like I say, I remember once, I'm talking years ago when I was boxing, and I boxed Vince Sweeney one night down in London. 8-3, took the 5 days, I think even on the afternoon, and it was on Sky or Eurosports with that. And I've gone in the pub the next day, there's a fucking bunch of idiots in there, and the one kid's gone, oh, you was on the telly last night. I was like, yeah, he went, I could have beat that kid. And I went, why was you a boxer? I could have beat that kid. I said, oh, could you? So I fucking banged him out. I'll give him a bang. You know what I mean? Don't try and make out you're a boxer, mate. Like, you know, I thought, you know, that type of, like, it's like me watching the football. I couldn't have fucking scored that goal. Yeah. I couldn't have scored the goal because I'm crap at football. So don't, you know, I said to him, well, was you a boxer by any chance? Like, you done boxing? No. So don't fucking insult my intelligence, mate. Do you know what I mean? Vince Fenn, you weren't a bad kid either, and not, but like, don't make out you could have done what I've done. I've done 8 frees, mate. 24 minutes in the ring fighting. They don't understand it. Because, like, anyone can sit and watch. I mean, I don't even get it now. I watch the boxing. I think, fucking hell, man. They should have done this and that. But I'm a boxer. But, like, when it's good, it's the 7th and 8th round. It's fucking tiring work, man. You know, it's hard work, man. People don't realise how fit you got to be.
I mean, you also mentioned at the start there, you talked about booze and fags. Have you smoked all the way through your career?
No. I didn't used to really. I like a drink now. But I used to have a drink. I was young, man. When I was still boxing. And, like, looks like, because I've been in prison for so many years that I'm still partying and that. And I used to look great, but I used to train in that, and I never used to really smoke then. But later on in my career, I used to have the old fag when I used to go out that. But like, I smoke now.
What, you'd smoke in the dressing room and just...
No, I wouldn't smoke.
I'd on the way to a fight or afterwards or whatever.
So I'd weigh in, and they said you had 6 or something. If I was at York, I'd pop out the back and have a fag, do you know what I mean? But...
In your boxing gear?
Yeah.
Glad
but, not, no, glad not a good bandage. But,
hold this.
But you never, saw me puffing and out of breath, because like I say, even though I used to run every single day, I've always been...
Oh, you're so conditioned to doing it.
That's what I mean.
100 fights might not seem like a whole lot when you compare it to Peter's 300, but I can assure you, Arv Mittu has a sensational story of his own to tell.
You know what, Trish, I was a traffic warden for a while. I don't know if you knew that. I did for Birmingham Council. I was a contractor. I worked for a private company who were contracted to Birmingham Council. And I used to book cars. And one afternoon, I went down to Nobby's gym in the afternoon. He says, have you got your kit on, you have? I says, yeah, why? He says, there's a fight for you. I says, okay. So it was like about training session to train. And I just had the notice to go and fight. So I went with him down to London to fight. And I fought. Yeah, and I lost on points. Oh, dear. Yeah, so that's about the shortest notice I've ever had. To go to a gym to train, and when you get in the gym to train, he's telling me there's a fight, and I've gone and fought straight away. As soon as the training session's finished, he's took me down to London in his car.
Then there's the other side of the sport too, where I'll be talking to people at the business end of boxing, including promoter Nissa Sauerland. You got any good value of travel stories? There's got to be something about him getting in a black
car. I was just
flying first class everywhere.
God, yeah. Could you imagine being sat next to him on an EasyJet or a Ryanair flight?
No,
it would not be nice. What was the story? I listened to Jake the Snake on a podcast, and he was talking about Andre the Giant, and didn't he? He couldn't go on a normal toilet. He had to go in the bath.
Yeah,
or something
I've heard
like that.
I've heard that.
I'm not saying that, but I thought that was quite an interesting one.
What about food wise? Did he put away a lot of food? Is it like, what did anything set him apart?
Do you know what? He read Tolstoy.
I've read this. So, he's a very well read philosopher, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very intelligent. He reads bedtime stories now in Russia, you know, for kids, like nighttime story. He's quite high up in the government, I think,
I've heard that as well,
St. Petersburg. He's a brainy guy, you know.
He wasn't bad as a fighter, is he?
No, all he could do is throw a 1-2, but, you know, it was quite a good 1-2.
It was quite a rangy 1-2.
Exactly. I mean, I just remember, you know, one of my memories of him is David Hay making him dance in the 12th round.
Yeah.
That was... I haven't seen anything like that. That was his last fight.
That
was his last fight.
Yeah, exactly. What did you guys have talks to bring him back? Did you want him to fight again, or was it like...
I think he was set in his mind that he didn't want to fight again.
Because he was hurt, or because he made his money and that was
I think he made his money. I think he had really good opportunities with the government, like the Russian government.
Yeah.
Let's not go there. apparently there's an election on at the moment.
He's big into hunting as well, isn't he?
I think that's kind of the done thing in Russia.
I guess all the animals can see him coming though, because he's bigger than most of them.
Oh no, I've seen him in a duck hat, like the duck hunting hat. I saw that somewhere. I don't know where I saw that, but yeah, that was quite...
nice guy. Is he a nice guy?
nice guy.
Is it, what is he, like a gentle giant?
Yeah, doesn't speak a lot of English. Didn't like fighting. Didn't enjoy it, I don't think. You know?
Did he ever do stuff with King?
Yeah, we did. We had, I'll send you an image. We got a photo of King.
Was it
we
a
did a co-promotion fight? With King. It was Valuev against Monty Barrett.
Okay.
Chicago. And we had a... got Trump was there. Got a photo of King, Trump and Valuev. But Trump was... he was upset that he wasn't as tall as Valuev, so I had to rearrange the photo a few times, apparently. So I'm a bit mad. 6'4", isn't he, Trump?
Is he? Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's Valuev? 7'2".
Yeah. I think it ranges from who my dad would probably say 7'4" for the effect.
And someone else might say 6'10".
Yeah, probably about 7 foot.
Yeah. He's bigger than your average bear, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a big boy. I think heavyweights, though, on the whole now, you know, I was saying to, randomly my wife, I was like, she's like, oh, Usyk's so small compared to Joshua. I was like, yeah, but you know, you go back to the Ali days. I don't know, what did Ali weigh in at? I'm not an expert at that, but probably around 100, right? I mean, I don't think
he was that kilos?
Big.
Yeah, he would have been about 210, 215.
Yeah.
And then you got Marciano, way smaller than
that. Yeah, so I mean, it's just, Usyk's we've got
smaller
bigger,
than Joshua, but he's still a big man.
It's a big guy, yeah. But, you know, when you're looking at them in the ring for the layperson, her point of view, she was like, he's so much smaller.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think people don't realise that we've just become a bigger human race, haven't we?
And then there are the old timers, former fighters, including former heavyweight Ron Gray, who boxed on both Cooper Ali bills, was friends with the legendary Randy Turpin, and who had hundreds of fights in the old boxing booths. You mentioned the wrestling side of it. Some people sort of pitied him for doing that. Did you feel sorry for him that he'd sort of been reduced to that, or did you think it was just a solid way of making money?
Well, I thought it was terrible.
Did you?
Yeah. I didn't. It never affected me on there with what I thought of Randolph.
No, of course.
Because everything he'd done for me, I mean, bear in mind, I'm talking to Randolph Turpin, that was 10 years or 15 years past his.
Yeah.
Past his well,
yeah, what you say is terrible is the fact
was
that you had.
On, but the fact
that,
you know,
the
that
greatest,
dream,
one of the great middleweights had to do that to make some money, sure.
Because today, whether Randolph had been any good after this, but he could have earned thousands, just top tables on these shows, couldn't he?
Do you think he could have done that? You know,
I
in do. Terms of as a speaker, and
I don't
that,
think
was he engaging?
Been a good speaker, but the fact if you could have sat him on the top table here tomorrow night,
done a few Q&As,
given him a
it?
Grand, and yeah. then just people had packed him.
Yeah,
they'd have packed it. They'd have backpacked the place. Still
fascinating to talk about him because you know we're getting to a point now where people are talking about. I don't know, the next generation on, really.
Well,
you know, Minter, Stracey and
the
stuff. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They.
Yeah.
But, I mean, as I say, every morning we stop at this cafe, bought me a bacon and egg sandwich, and we used to go in and loud and come have a little sing-song on the way back. Driving the lorry. Well, a terrible driver, mind you.
That's great. Frightening. One of the other things you mentioned was the booths, and you had a lot of fights in the booths.
I did, yes.
So how does that work? So I've got so many questions about the booths because it's always fascinated me, but tell me
again, that was, just interrupting you, that was Randy Turpin.
He got you involved in them?
Well, what happened, him and Jackie, you know, in them days, the boxing was from September till about May. There was none of these summer shows, and it was just a season show.
Sure.
So all of a sudden, I thought I'd be able to go home now from living in Leamington for 3 months, come back. I said, what are you on about? He says, the booth just opened in there in Coventry. We did the booth in the summer. And I said, the boxing booth? He says, yeah. I said, well, anyway, I went out. They took me over on the Friday night, and I tell you how I mend my mind, but I always liked a few quid anyway. But I think I had about 7 fights, and the crowd kept coming and ran. And there's a few other fights who I've forgotten the names now. Not so well known boxers, but.
When you say you had 7 fights, you had 7 fights, one after the other.
From the crowd, coming in from the crowd.
So you're stood up there, taking
on
all comers.
They've got me on the top, you see. The Turpins want him on the top. We don't even call him for the fight. They're calling me to fight me.
Right.
I'm the booth fighter.
And we'll be back on October the 13th 2021 for season 4 of Boxing Life Stories.